It's Gerard Whateley. Thanks for listening to the podcast. In this episode, the face-off between Essendon and North Melbourne for the services of Alistair Clarkson. Luke Hodge had a great insight into his former coach. Carlton defender Jacob Wietering ahead of the season-defining clash with Collingwood. Sam Edmund had the latest footy news, including details of the club COVID breaches. Adam Gilchrist on the private reunion of former cricketing teammates, and Wayne Hawkes in the studio. You can get in touch at any time, Whateley@sen.com.au. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
Wednesday morning. This is your town. This is your station. This is Whateley.
Good morning. Is Alistair Clarkson to Essendon the Messiah complex at play, or an arranged marriage, or just a damn good idea? Does North Melbourne need Clarkson more than Essendon does? Should Clarkson take the job at Arden Street as a service to football? Or should the coach weigh up the job he's most suited to and where he is likely to have the greatest success? Is it romanticism versus pragmatism? Would restoring North Melbourne and winning its first premiership since the Pagan era be a greater legacy piece than solving two decades of mediocrity at a riven Essendon and delivering a flag not seen since the days of Sheedy? These are all questions up for debate. You can help me settle our debate if you like. 0433 98 11 16. Thus far, Alistair Clarkson has played his cards masterfully. He kept two suitors at the table through the patient opening hands. Once a third player emerged, and most critically a player in his hometown, he folded the idea of moving interstate and released the Giants from the game. Kudos to the Giants for playing at another table concurrently. North Melbourne might like to call Clarkson to show his hand today, but I can't see why the coach would. At the very least, to satisfy his own curiosity, Clarkson will want to explore what Essendon looks like, and he can only do that once the office is empty at the hangar. Essendon might need to get a move on, but if North is determined to call Clarkson's bluff, they risk losing him. It is tense times at the Texas Hold'em table on a Wednesday morning, and there are no tells when it comes to reading Clarkson's mind. And add to that, there are conflicting reports around the existence of a deadline. We will wade through that this morning, see what we can find, see what conversations we can have, and bring in your thoughts as we go. At Essendon, they're in the phantom zone, caught between the incumbent coach and the next coach, and you can't live there for long. Zach Merritt gave us an insight into odd times last night on 360.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty strong and courageous to show up chest out, ready to help us prepare to play against Richmond Saturday night. You know, he didn't shy away from the fact. He was open, he brought it up. I won't go into the detail of what he said, but he brought it up, brought the elephant into the room and chatted through the situation. And I think players respected that. And I think the common theme in the room was players feeling sorry that we're in this position and that he was in the position. I think he's guarded us throughout the year with some really poor games and taking responsibility personally. And you know, to get to this point is largely on us as players, so that's the disappointing part.
Would you like to know before you go on your off-season break what the direction of the club is going to be?
Yeah, it's a unique one. I think I copped a bit of criticism probably last year for holding out a contract about direction of the club, and to be sitting here in a bit of mess 12 months later is a bit disappointing, but also have committed long-term to the club and really keen, hopeful that in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 months that they get really clear on what they want to achieve and how we're going to achieve it, and all fall into line massively on that path. But I'm not going to put a date on or hope that it's exactly right on Tuesday.
Zach Merritt with us last night with that insight into what is taking place at the Bombers right now and his overall feelings having recommitted to the club and finding themselves in a mess, at least for now. 0433 98 11 16, temper a mattress like no other. We'll take your calls as we go along. Luke Hodge has had the best read on Alistair Clarkson as this year has unfolded, which is not surprising given the long-term connection there, and he has become the reference point when you contemplate the idea of Clarkson coming into a fresh club. Hodgie, great to have you back.
Morning, Jared. Yeah, well, I think everyone's, I was starting to believe last week that, look, it was a nice, smooth process and he's going to make a decision this week. But we, as we sort of said the whole way along, is why would he rush? If he's got options, why would he rush in? Because one thing you know about Clarko is at the heat of the moment, he makes a quick decision and it might not be the right one. But when he's got time and space to sort of sit back and think and sum up all the options, he did that with GWS, even though we had the four interviews and found out that wasn't the right pathway for him. The North Melbourne one looked like it was a making for both of them. And then because of his patience, he's now got another suitor, a possible suitor. And I'm sitting here saying, North Melbourne supporters, don't be stressed. Just because he's saying he'd like an interview, this is Clarko doing the due diligence, making sure that every stone has been turned to make sure that he makes a clear decision and a right decision for him and his family. So just because he's agreed to meet with Essendon and have a chat, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's more in favour to go there than North Melbourne. It's just making sure that he's a person who wants to make sure everything is done correctly. He knows all the information before he makes a pretty, I'd say, a pretty big decision moving forward.
So don't worry about the imposition of deadlines?
One thing, I wouldn't be telling a person like Clarko, you need to make a decision now, because if he's getting forced and told to do something, I don't think it'll end your way. So if North have been patient with him this far, just because another suitor or another team has become available, don't force the issue and tell him to go and make a decision now, because I don't know 100% that would be the right way to go with a person like Clarko. I still think he's a good suitor. Like if you match up the two, if you look at North Melbourne, he's got 5 years of grace. He's got 5 years of bringing in the people who he wants. In threes, if they're still developing, like North Melbourne have had a poor record for the last 4 or 5 years. They need a change. They need someone to come in. And Clarko's the person to come in, to bring sponsors, to bring members, to bring hope and positivity going to the future. If you go to Essendon, all of a sudden, that five-year grace isn't there. Essendon are a team that wants success. They're desperate for success. And if you look, they got rid of Knights because he wasn't doing the job after 2 years. Obviously, whatever with Hurdy. But then Worsfold, they weren't happy with Worsfold because he wasn't getting there quick enough. Ben Rutten made the finals in his first year. And now in the second year, they're trying to get rid of him. So this grace of Essendon, and don't forget the old Hawthorn-Essendon rivalry from the members, as soon as it gets into maybe second year or into his third year, where if they haven't made the finals, how about these Essendon supporters thinking, I'll go back to Hawthorn, we should have kept Rutten. There's still a bit to play out, even though as far as a media and entertainment point of view, looking from afar, it's made it a little bit spicy.
It has made it spicy indeed. So that's the downside to Essendon. What do you think the upside would be for Clarkson as he looks into that role?
Do you mean apart from sticking it to Hawthorn after getting rid of him?
Now, I was wondering whether you would say that or not. But that is such an interesting part. So he talks about he's been on the Jeff Kennett World Tour this year. He speaks about that publicly. There is obviously residual hurt there. And I can imagine the idea of going to the bitter enemy, which is depicted across a double page spread in today's Herald Sun, and going, well, you didn't want me, so here I am on the other side of it.
And can you imagine if Hawthorn are on the brink of finals next year and Essendon are in the same position and Clarko knocks Hawthorn out to take a final spot? He's not going to come down to make a decision solely on that, but if it works out that he does coach Essendon, he'll be sitting there with a little smirk on his face going, it's my time to get you back after what you put me through. So it'll be interesting anyway. But as you sort of said, there's so many, you asked before about what are the highlights of Essendon. Essendon do have some quality players on their list. And we saw that for when they made the finals in 2021. Yes, they had a harder draw this year. They didn't play the football we expected. There was a lot of comments on, were they defensively minded enough? I can tell you what, if Clarko gets into that side, they're going to be defensively minded. I can tell you that, because there's going to be vision upon vision upon vision all through pre-season of doing the right things defensively and what not to do. And anytime you do that, whether it's a short-sighted game, whether it's a practice match, whether it's a pre-season game, he takes that so seriously that if anyone steps one foot the wrong way in a defensive system, you'll be shown about it. And if you keep doing it, you won't play. So that's that's the thing with it. There is so many upsides to the Essendon list if he does decide to go there. And this is all hypothetical. Ben Rutten at the moment still has the job at Essendon until we go further. But yeah, there's an upside if he does make that decision.
Yes, there is. So, do you think there's so Robbo and I were debating this last night. Do you think there's a difference between the legacy piece of winning the flag with North Melbourne? So this is not assuming anything. It's just the ultimate aim. So you go in to build a program to win a premiership. Is there a difference between the legacy premiership, the romance of rebuilding North Melbourne and taking them to a flag, the first one since the Pagan era, or mending a riven Essendon and winning the first flag since the Sheedy era, which if Carlton don't get there first would have historic echoes as well?
Oh, they're both. I think knowing Clarko for as long as what I have, the sentimental side of what John Kennedy did, go from Hawthorn to North Melbourne. He was a very much a big mentor for Clarko, and we did a lot of things in pre-season because that's what John Kennedy taught Clarko in pre-season when he was in there. The grueling team first, the Kennedy Commandos, we were the Clarkson Commandos. There's a lot of sentimental value with that decision to go there. But on the flip of it, for a big coach like Clarko to go to a rival team and be the first person to coach a premiership team after Kevin Sheedy, that's pretty big. So whatever decision he makes, if he can push on to make success, you know it's going to be a huge story either way because there's so much attached to both teams.
Yeah. What about the Essendon scenario right now? Just the phantom zone of living in these couple of days. Zach Merritt gave us a little insight. So we get you to run the leadership portfolio, Luke. How would you deal with days like this?
You know, it's like whenever things aren't going great, whenever you've got no confidence or things are against it, you can have performances like what they've done over the last 2 weeks, especially on the weekend. That was as bad as what I've seen from Essendon. And I think a lot of their supporters and a lot of their players have admitted to that as well. But a lot of things do get magnified as well. The Hind thing on the bench with Rutten, when I saw that, I think it was about a 10 or 12 second. And we heard Hind talk yesterday and said, it wasn't much. I'll get along with Ben really well. We joke around. There was no issue. I was just got tackled. But you sort of look into it. If you're on the bench for 12 seconds and someone's trying to give you help and trying to give you feedback and telling you what you did right, what you did wrong, you just go away at 50, have a chat, you make eye contact at least once. I think that was a damning thing. And I think a lot of people looked into that and going, oh, has he lost the players? From one act, you don't know that. But there's a few things as a leadership group, you'd be sitting down with a player who did that and saying, that's not on. You need to show their coach full respect. If any coach, whether it's the fitness coach, the trainer, the doctor, especially the head coach, if they're talking to you, look them in the eye. No matter how angry you are, at least for a second, then you can look away and do stuff. But at least give them the respect that you are listening to what they're saying.
Yeah, so if you'd been aware of that separately to all of this, because it is a couple of weeks ago, that is the sort of thing that you would address.
Yeah, without a doubt. And especially the hardest thing is when things aren't going well as a group, that's when everything's magnified. So you need to nip a lot of things in the butt early on and have these chats, have these discussions with your players, just so when people are looking for things, they don't find them. And there's no doubt next week, Pines on the bench, he's going to be chatting with Ben as often as he can and making sure it all looks positive, because for a second there, he was just in the game and his mind was somewhere else because he obviously had what going on. But these are these little things that you try and touch on to make sure that everyone's looking after one another, because everyone from external is looking in at the club going, well, what can we look at? What can we pick at?
How do you find a sense of purpose, Luke, when the coach looks like he's out the door and the board has lost faith in him, and he's there, he addresses it in a self-deprecating manner, he wins the admiration of the players for doing that, but how do you stay together for a week in such curious circumstances?
Tell you what, Jerry, it would be tough. For what's going on, and I think we spoke a lot last year about clubs on how to handle saying goodbye to coaches and doing it the right way, wrong way. We sort of went Hawthorn were looked good at the start, and then that fell down. And then we thought, oh, hang on, Carlton went and bypassed Hawthorn on how not to get rid of a coach or how to part ways with a coach. But then this one, the inconsistencies of what we've heard from Essendon this year has been unreal. From where we're stable, we're going through a review. You don't hear anything about the review, and then the review comes back saying that, yep, we're going to keep the coach. Next thing, the president stands down, and we're now searching for a new, or possibly searching for a new coach, at least asking questions. As a player, it's so hard. And I've always said, stability on field comes from stability off field. So I know we sit back and look at the performances that the players are being putting up, but that's no worse than the stability has been off field at that football club, which is hard. And I know that everyone in that position is trying to do the best thing for the football club, but there's been so many chops and changes and bumps in the road along the way. It's no wonder probably everyone there is probably looking over their shoulder.
Yes. Do you have a similar experience? I'm just trying to think back to your early years. Did you have that week where Peter Schwab was and wasn't, and the weirdness that goes with an exiting coach?
We had a week where I think Schwab was going to coach out the rest of the year, and then I think he did one game. And so, mate, I was a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah.
I think a 19 or 20-year-old kid then. So at the time, so this is where you sort of look at the younger guys and they don't know what's going on. They're guys out there just trying to play football. A lot of them are just excited. They're playing senior football. Whether you win or lose is not a priority. I know when I was a kid, it wasn't. It was about playing senior football because that's what you wanted to do. It's not until you get older where you understand the pressures of a coach, what goes on, how important off-field stability around the football club impacts the coaches, impacts the players and the whole football department. But as far as what I'd gone through, with Swabby and Hawthorn, I was a young kid, so I didn't sort of take any of it in as much as what I would have if I was an older player.
Yeah. So that very much falls to the leaders then to provide a bit of direction when Saturday night's game comes along. There's one game left in the season. You're coming off just a dreadful performance. You're in this phantom zone as to what on earth the club is doing. Whose responsibility is Saturday night to provide a reason to play and a credible performance worthy of a professional team?
This is where you'd hope the coaches get with the senior group and just sort of say, like, this is back against the wall stuff. And I know, funny we're talking about Clarko, but whenever something was going on in the media and they were having a go at us as a group, us as a club, he'd use that as motivation that this is 22 blokes out in the field plus coaches. Let's show them what we're made of, and it's a really us versus you mentality. I think that's what they'll need to get out this last game. There's one more game at the end of the year. Richmond are playing some pretty good footy at the moment, and that would be the motivation. How can we upset this team who we've had a pretty big history against as well? But just to show everyone out there that we are united and we've got a bit of fight left in us.
Luke Hodge runs our leadership portfolio, gets us underway on a Wednesday. We'll shortly take your calls. There's a few more things to run past Hodgie next, including last night's tribunal hearing, the clearing of Zane Cordy. So I think we're all quite relieved on that front. And then an eye toward what's coming, and particularly Carlton and Collingwood. Jacob Wiedering is going to join me as the morning unfolds on our McCafe menu. Sam Edmund with the latest around Essendon and more broadly in the footy world. Adam Gilchrist and Wayne Hawks in the studio. McCafe, our official coffee partner.
It's a really confusing one at the moment. You can see that he paused in it. And as a player, you're sort of almost at the point now, and I think I mentioned it earlier at the start of the year, you've almost just got to move away from that reaction of putting your arm up to it. Because if it's going to get reported straight to the tribunal, it's just a really tricky one. So I'm not sure. And there's been some controversial ones in the last couple of weeks. And even I felt a little bit for Brad Crouch with his incident. My interpretation of it was that Gardner had slipped a little bit as he went to kick. So, I mean, my takeaway of it again is that we just maybe got to move away from the bumpers players.
That was Tom Hawkins last night. He had said that earlier in the year with the suspension. I think we were all thankful that the Zane Cordy case came back as not guilty. It was a bit of a head-scratcher what it was doing at the tribunal in the first place and sort of what the AFL's end game with that is. Perhaps it was meeting their legal obligations as at least having that tested. Luke, I know you followed this. Luke Hodge, what did you think last night?
Well, I can understand why the match review panel sent it to the tribunal because they probably would have got overruled no matter what decision they made anyway. But I'm glad that it was talked about and put out there to show that you can still have a physical game and do it cleanly, because I think I'm the same as everyone else, because I thought the bump was dead. I thought it was, if you elect a bump and you get someone in the head, whether you mean to or not, it's your fault and you will be held to account for it. But in certain situations, you still can correctly lay a bump, as we saw on the weekend. And I think how they worked it, it's if someone sees you coming and they've got clear vision that you're there and it's a fairly shaped bump, we can still accept that in the game. I think where we're going from now and what it's making more and more clear, it's when someone's not ready for it, as far as the crouch on Darcy Gardner, where he's kicking the ball, wasn't needed to be bumped then. You could have pushed him and had the same impact. You weren't going to smother the ball. I think that's where it's starting to clear up. The bump still can be done in the game in a correct manner if the person who you're doing it to can see you coming, which clears up a lot for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, it was a good finding, that's for sure. Okay, the footy that's coming, the Carlton-Essendon game, the Carlton-Collingwood game is going to occupy so much of our attention on the way to Sunday. It's a sellout. We're talking 90,000 plus. Aaron has texted through really eagerly. Hodgie, I'm fascinated by the Pies versus Blues game on Sunday and the psychology of it. Is it as simple as who is more desperate wins? How much are we looking forward to Sunday?
Oh, I've got no idea, to be honest. I'm actually wrapped. I'll do a Sunday game every now and then, and I'm flying down to do this game, so I cannot wait. But so much is on the line. So the Carlton supporters to get Cripps back with the decision last week, but then to just let, in the last 2 minutes, we've spoken throughout the year on how Carlton have won so many tight games because they do things. How Collingwood have won so many tight games because they do things in a really calm manner. Then we saw Carlton in that situation last weekend, and clearly Melbourne learnt from the week the weeks prior, where Carlton dropped chest marks in the D50. They panicked. They left spare blokes around. They'll be fighting to make up for that because they need to win to stay in the eight. It's going to be huge. And Collingwood, people start to, the big talk about Collingwood is how good a football they've been playing, how exciting it is. But they've had the one loss now. Will that affect them? They've had a few injuries as well. But I can tell you what, 3:20 on Sunday, what a way to finish off the home and away season with two teams that are, one to get back on the winning circle after having so many in a row, and the other one pretty much need to win to keep their season alive.
So the Carlton psychological side of it, I'm going to ask Jacob Wiedering this. It is like it's the unanswerable until you've got the benefit of hindsight. But how do you work through when you've had such an emotionally wrought result and the sheer devastation that went with the end of that? How do you go about picking yourselves up for the next task, given that it's the same prize that's on offer on Sunday as there was last Saturday night?
This is where players talk about resilience in football and the mindset of you've got to get over a really good win or a really bad loss really quickly. And using the motivation from Carlton and what they had, they've got to use that as motivation to make sure that when they come against Collingwood, and let's be honest, any player for Collingwood or Carlton, whenever they play against each other, you don't need much motivation. The supporters do that for you. Having 95,000 MCG will do that for you. But Carlton have to focus on the areas that they did right, but also learning curve for them of what they did wrong in that last few minutes to cost them the game. So with a minute 12 to go, they're up by, I think it was 7 points or something around that margin. And then from to let it slip from that. So understand what you did well, understand how you lost the game, and if you're in that situation next time, what you can do better. But more importantly, it's show your heart, come out, throw everything at it, because it's the last game of the year. If you lose this weekend, it's probably going to be the last game of the year for you and your team. So, to be honest, I cannot wait for Sunday to see how both these teams react.
Great stuff. And then Friday night's the starting point. So the Brisbane Lions and Melbourne. For the Lions, this has been their stumbling block in recent times, the Demons. So there's so much to play for here, obviously places in the top four. It feels like it runs a little bit deeper than just that for the Lions as well.
Yeah, I think if you look at the last two to three times that the Lions have played Melbourne have really shut down their offensive ball movement. Melbourne's defensive stability behind the ball is amazing. And if you don't move the ball with angles and keep the ball in motion, as we've seen Collingwood do a few weeks ago, as we saw Carlton do a little bit last weekend. But the teams that really opened them up was the Fremantle and Sydney early in the year when they beat them after they had their 10 in a row. So if the Lions can sort out their ball movement and not just settle for a long down the line, which Melbourne crave, it will hold them in good stead. But on the flip side is Melbourne's going to get their fair share of inside 50s. It's up to the Lions' defence to be able to limit the scoring fact. And Melbourne's connection inside 450 hasn't been ideal of late, but they get the ball in the 450 that much that they're going to get opportunities to score. So it's going to be a ripping battle. And that's another one. To kick off round 23, there's no better way, I don't think.
Do you think the Lions are good enough to win this game on Friday night?
This is the tricky one. What I've seen from the Lions the last 3 weeks has probably been, at times, their best football for the year.
Yep.
Like they've been so pinching in the first half against Richmond. What they did against Carlton in the first half, against St Kilda early, they dominated. But where you need to win these big games of football is the difference between your best and your worst can't be that big of a gap. And what we've seen from their best to the worst the last 3 weeks is a huge gap. And Melbourne are a team that can hurt you. They're powerful. They're explosive through the middle. If they turn the ball over, which they love scoring from turnover once they're set up behind the ball, they will really hurt you if you go through a flat patch, as the Lions have the last 3 weeks. So, look, Lions need to play four quarters of football and just not give Melbourne that opportunity to squash their offensive game style.
What a great way to finish the season with so many possibilities still in play. It's going to be enormous, isn't it?
Cannot wait. And then it'll be a boring week off and then into finals, but this round 23, it's going to be a great way to start and finish round 23.
Terrific, Hodgie. Look forward to talking to you as it all unfolds.
Thank you, Jared. Have a good one. I'll see you this weekend.
Luke Hodge, who runs our leadership portfolio and a bit broader than that, with the setup for round 23. Jacob Wienering, right, we have the pleasure of this conversation every couple of weeks for Hyundai Tucson Turbo Diesel in stock now. What was on Saturday night and what comes on Sunday afternoon. Jacob Wienering, always great to have you on the program.
It's good to be back, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Now, just as a viewer, Saturday night was exhausting. It was impossibly cruel at the end. I have a slight emotional leaning toward you. At the moment, I felt like I needed trauma counselling at the end of it. That's to say nothing of the Blues fans who are in attendance or those who are out on the field. How did you digest what took place late on Saturday night?
Yeah, it was a tough one, Jared. Obviously, the game certainly came down to the wire. We've had a few of those and been able to get over the line sort of at the start of the year. But to be honest, I actually didn't see that last goal. I remember seeing the two-minute sign going up, and I said to myself, I'm going to make sure that my man doesn't get anywhere near the ball. And I think I was on Fritch at the time. We ran past the contest, and then I hear the roar, and obviously, Cozzy kicked that goal. So it was incredibly disappointing. You probably saw the reactions of some of the boys, but you have to pick yourself up and you've got to go again. And there's a pretty big motivation to get the job done this week.
Yeah, absolutely, there is. Just take us to the final siren. What did you feel?
It's 120 minutes of work. And we've sort of reviewed the game. We can go into it a little bit later if you like. We looked at it and it was probably 118 minutes of very good football, a brand that we really want to play, and I think Melbourne would probably say the same about themselves. It was a contested brand. There was lots of pressure, tackles. Our defence held up really well. I think they had 58 or 59 entries, which was 10 or 11 more than us, and they went at a lower efficiency. And we were really happy with the way we played up until those last 2 minutes, and there were just moments in those last 2 minutes that we probably could have grabbed a hold of and won the game from there. And I guess you look back as well, Melbourne's game the previous week, I reckon they went through a pretty similar review in how they could have won the game. So lots of learning, obviously incredibly frustrating and disappointed. I guess most people would have seen the reaction. It was a heart stopper and the boys were pretty flat afterwards. But Vossi was able to get us up. And as I said, we've got very high motivation to go out against Collingwood this week and get a win. So I'm sure we'll do what we can there.
It was heroic, I thought, the way you played. It was that big stand for the prize that's on offer. Did you feel like you just laid it all out there?
In those sort of games, understanding who we're coming up against, we've played Brisbane, Melbourne, and now we've got Collingwood, all teams that are going to be playing in September. So it was always going to be a test this last 3 weeks, but I guess against the reigning premiers, you try and give it your absolute all. And I thought guys all over the field really stood up. I thought Sam Doherty was unbelievable in the midfield for the most part. Harry up forward was obviously Charlie was somewhat taken out of the game by Petty and played a great game, and Harry got on the scoreboard. And you look at Liam Stocker and Marchbank and McGovern, those sort of guys coming back in and getting some continuity. It gives us some really good confidence going into the back half of this season. So yeah, hopefully we can. As I said, it's. I'm not sure if I was on the radio before the last Collingwood game, but I might choose to tackle instead of bump this week against Collingwood. No, it should be a good game, though, for sure.
How forensic was the analysis of that last 2 minutes that you mentioned?
We watched it twice over. And again, you sort of just try and look at moments. I mean, no one ever goes out there to make mistakes.
No.
And I just remember the 2 minute sign going up, and I think there was about a minute to go, and we sort of won the ball back, and Harry takes an uncontested mark, and I think Charlie takes the uncontested mark out of the D50, kicks it to Harry, and then we can just maintain the ball from there. We miss a kick, we probably kick the ball a little corridor, and we go to a long down the line. There was a contest where I was able to seal, and you know, two blokes spoil each other. There was just a number of moments that we really could have just taken a hold of, and it's frustrating to look at, and understandably, I guess everyone involved, it's not just the individual players, everyone involved is frustrated and wants to do better. And as I said, they're going to be learning experiences. If the situation arises next week against a team that's done it 8 or 9 times this year, being able to get over the line in the last 2 minutes, we'll train that and hopefully get a job done. So, yeah, I mean, we looked at it in depth, but at the same time, that was the first thing we looked at. And then we looked at the previous 118 minutes, as I spoke about, which was a really, really positive outcome for us.
Yeah, so the coaching technique in that. So I'm a long-term believer that winning close games is a learned skill. And sometimes you have to have the other side of it to learn it and to ingrain it and then to roll it out next time. Is that the sort of approach that your coaches took?
No, I'd completely agree with that. You have to understand the game throws so many different scenarios at you. Obviously, defenders have got their things to worry about. Midfielders, forwards, the same. And there's just different situations. It's like in the last 2 minutes, if you are up, you want to keep the ball in tight and try and get some repeat stoppages. You want to keep it in your forward half. Ideally, keep it close to the boundary. It's just all these little things that I guess you have to know as a player, and then at the same time, if you're a leader out on the ground, you've got to try and communicate it as best as possible. And yeah, obviously there was, as I said, some moments that we really could have got done right, but I think if those moments arise again, the players that were involved and the team will certainly get those things done. So I guess in a nutshell, that is how they went about it yesterday.
Jacob, the intangible question, the unanswerable, it'll only be there in hindsight, is how does a team who lays it all out there in such a manner and gets such overwhelming disappointment at the end, how do you dust yourself off to be ready to do it again in 8 days' time? Have you got an answer for that in prospect?
It is a hard question to answer. All I'll say is last year I had holidays booked for September, and this year there is a very, very hungry club in Carlton that wants to play at the back end of the year, and it's an awesome opportunity to be involved in. And what better team to come up against than Collingwood, the old rival? I believe tickets are sold out. I'm not too sure.
Yep.
And it's just going to be an incredible environment, and you can take it in one or two ways. You can see it as pressure and obviously you'll get nervous and those sorts of things, or it's a privilege to go out there and play. And I played out in front of a few, you know, 70, 80,000 crowds in round one, but I don't think I've run out in a crowd, in front of a crowd this big. So, and certainly obviously the stage is set. So we'll take it on board for sure. And I guess it just motivates me to go out and do a job for this team. So certainly there's the carrot at the end, but we've got to do a job, and there's a process behind it.
So this is an elimination final before an elimination final for you in a very real way. So the shapes, it'll be the biggest game that you've played in?
I would probably say so. That's something we probably looked at yesterday as well. The moments that we've had across the season shouldn't go unrecognised. We've had games where we've been down and we've been able to come back. There's been games where we're up by a lot and teams have come back and challenged us and we've still been able to get the win. Richmond stands out to me. GWS up there, the Sydney game, the Fremantle game over here. So there's been moments and there's been games where we've been able to stand up and do a job. And obviously over the last 2 weeks we haven't been able to do that. And there is that inner motivation to do the job with obviously the external noise that's probably going to come with this week, and it's just exciting. It's exciting to be, it really is all out. Obviously there may be the, you've got the Doggies game to look at as well, but that's completely out of our control, and that's what Vossi's been preaching, the controllables and the process, and that's what we'll focus on.
I love that insight. There's a few wise people in our game who say you get what you deserve, and you deserve this opportunity for all the work that you've done throughout the season. So is Michael Voss sort of drawing all that together to crystallise it for you?
I think he's just trying to instill in us that we have, you know, it's been a process since I think it was about November 22 when we came back, and all the older boys came back with the younger boys a little bit earlier. The pre-season, we had a great one. Obviously, the inclusions we've had, and that's probably another thing, and it's never an excuse. Players are going down sick and injured, but we've had some pretty important guys come in and out of the side, and as I mentioned before, we've got some names that come in and do a really good job for us. So there's, yeah, I guess your season's full of adversity, and it's how you sort of handle it and cope with it, and it'll really tell our story come Sunday.
So it's Collingwood and it's perfect. Is they're playing for a place in the top four, you're playing for a place in the top eight. It's the biggest Carlton Collingwood game since the 80s. I think that's unarguable. So that's a long time before your time, Jacob. What does Collingwood mean to you as a rival?
It's a really good question, Jared. I think we may have tried to answer this question maybe last year. It was,
yeah.
It's a funny thing about rivalries. Obviously, with us, we probably haven't been anywhere near the top eight in recent years. And now both teams, there's stories behind each team. Collingwood's unbelievable back end of the year. Obviously, our sort of coaching journey up until now and the maturity of the group over the past 7-8 years. And can't go back to the 80s because I was born in 97.
That's but, right.
it's clearly a massive rivalry within our game, and rivalries are certainly unbelievable to watch. And from, I guess, what you hear is it's a privilege to play in them. And as I said, 100,000 people, family and friends watching. It's win or go home for us. It's cementing a very good season for Collingwood if they get the job done. So There's plenty to play for. The whole AFL world will be watching, and hopefully the Blues come out on top.
You've got me counting the days already. I can't wait to be there to watch it. So in all of it, just let me see if you've been following anything else, Jacob, while you're zeroed right in. I'm super curious. Your captain he wins the appeal on Thursday night, and he plays. Great result for Carlton. Then Zane Cordy gets taken to the tribunal last night, which is a total head-scratcher for all of us as to why that case is there, but he beats it. Where do you think we are with the bump, with collisions and concussion at the moment?
We've spoken about this previously. I'm very much about consistency, and at the moment we clearly don't have it. I think there's a lot of people talking about the game. This isn't necessarily coming from me or not my opinion, but the game is somewhat lost. With what is going on with concussion, with the bump, with the resulting injury that occurs from certain football actions as well. And I think that was sort of the argument with Cripper's one was you sort of saw his eyes were for the ball. He was going for the ball in the contest, and as a result, Callum Archie gets concussed, and it's unfortunate that that's the way it panned out. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of media covering it because of, you know, Cooper as our captain, and the way it sort of all panned out up until, I think it was Thursday night. No, I was in bed.
Yes.
I woke up the next morning and found out that my captain was playing. So it was either Walshy and I are going to be doing the speech pre-game, and I think we were more thinking about that than Cooper getting off. So obviously a massive boost from morale, and he came out and did a job for us on the weekend. But yeah, I guess back to your point, Jared, consistency is key. I'm not a massive fan of the injury. Depending on the action, of course, the injury sort of determining the amount of weeks of suspension as well. I think that's been a case that's sort of been argued the last, you know, well, probably for this season. So it's certainly a tough one. It's probably got to be reviewed and looked at pretty carefully because at the end of the day, the safety of the player is paramount. And that should be the first thing in people's minds. And then from there, we can work out a strategy to, I guess make sure that we get the right result for the players that are either fined or suspended.
Yeah, it's not simple. And I think you've articulated that well. And the last one I was just going to ask you about is you would have a level of understanding, I suspect, for a few Essendon players at the moment when you're in a phase where there's just uncertainty, these vacuum days where there's a lot going on that you're not privy to whilst trying to prepare for footy. Can you put yourself in Essendon's shoes this morning with the recent experiences that you've had?
Oh, I think 12 months ago today, Jared, I was in their shoes.
Yeah.
And the current football club was too. So I can certainly sympathise with what's happening at Essendon. And it's probably just the unknown for a lot of people, players, coaches, staff. And it's certainly tough to go out, train, do your job, go out and try and play and get a result for the club when there is a lot of noise that you really can't control as someone on the inside. So, again, when I saw, I think it was either the paper yesterday or the day before, I think I said to Harry at the cafe, that was us sort of 12 months ago, and sort of our journey, we thought about our journey and reminisced a little bit about how far we've come, and that's sort of a positive from our point of view, how far we've been able to grow as a team and as a club and unite. So there's every opportunity for Essendon to do the same. You can sort of see how fast it turns around. So hopefully they get things right in their departments.
Jacob, always great to catch up. The very best of luck for what's to come on Sunday, and hopefully when next we talk, you're preparing for a final.
Beauty. Thanks for having me, Jared. Cheers.
Jacob Wietering, tomorrow's car is in stock today. Tech drive a Hyundai Tucson turbo diesel all-wheel drive. Great perspective on what took place on Saturday night, what they're gearing up for on Sunday, and a bit broader than that, the Essendon experience. That was Jacob's 12 months ago.
I wouldn't be telling a person like Clarko, you need to make a decision now, because if he's getting forced and told to do something, I don't think it'll end your way. So if North have been patient with him this far, just because another suitor or another team has become available, don't force the issue and tell him to go and make a decision now, because I don't know 100% that would be the right way to go with a person like Clarko.
Luke Hodge, don't impose a deadline, but he went on to say, don't be stressed either. Just because Clarkson wants to explore all that's in play, that's the natural way of him. So I asked Sam to do two bits of morning work for us. Sam Edmund for Effective Freight Solutions, get started with us today. I am reading conflicting reports that there is a deadline and that there isn't an ultimatum. So I just have to know. Sam Edmund, welcome.
Jared, good morning to you. Nothing wrong with a bit of homework, is there? And we did some.
Excellent. The first three periods of the morning, we're approaching recess. What have you learnt?
That's right.
What have you learnt so far today?
I'll just get my play lunch out now. So there's no ultimatum. There's no deadline. But there's a new word, Jared.
Mm.
We want an indication.
Oh, now that's nice. What an excellent compromise.
Now, this is from the Kangaroos themselves. They're not going to give Clarkson an ultimatum. They're not going to give him a deadline for an answer today. But they have instead asked for some sort of indication, an update, if you will, on Alistair Clarkson's line of thinking. So the Clarkson Cam understands that there's going to be a point where the Kangaroos might eventually need to broaden their thinking here. I mean, that's stating the bleeding obvious. And there's an understanding, albeit a begrudging one from North Melbourne, that the situation at Essendon demands Clarkson's consideration as well via his manager, James Henderson, who has had conversations with the Bombers. So all parties are on the same page. North Melbourne simply want an indication going forward, Jared.
And if that indication is we're going to take a period of time to talk to Essendon, what do you think North Melbourne does?
Yeah, that's a very good question. That's a hard one to answer at the moment. So it gets to a point where North Melbourne, they do have, we talked about it with Gary and Tim earlier, they do have a contingency plan. It's not like they're so invested in Alistair Clarkson, they haven't canvassed internally about where they go should they not get the answer they want. Now, if Alistair Clarkson says no, then that's when they go down the line of other experienced coaches. And those coaches will be Ken Hinckley and they will be Leon Cameron. Now, both of those two men have stated unequivocally, Ken, in Ken's case, that he wants to coach Port Adelaide next year and he has the backing eventually of David Koch. And then there's Leon Cameron who wants to stay in Sydney for family reasons, at least for next year anyway. So, but that doesn't stop North Melbourne asking the question. You've got it. You don't win the raffle without buying the ticket. So they're going to do that with those two gentlemen. I imagine they'll ask Nathan Buckley again, who sits in this chair regularly as well, about his thoughts. And he has been just as adamant as the former two men that we mentioned that coaching will not be for him next year. But that's the path North Melbourne will go down, I understand, if Alistair Clarkson eventually, and hopefully this isn't the case for North Melbourne, says no.
My second piece of homework was I'd want to understand more around the COVID breaches because there is a big difference between clerical breaches and nefarious deeds. And the third point that was made in the fines were uploading an image taken of a previous rat undertaken by that or another person.
Yep.
I could read that as fraudulent behaviour.
Well, it is because it is fraud. It is an element of fraud. And that last point is concerning. Now, the league did say in a statement right in the line below that point, that third point, that while the audit found that there were five clubs with varying levels of non-compliance, it did not find that any club had obtained a competitive advantage through failure to comply. So I'll put the question to them that how can you have both in the same statement? And the feedback came that there were some irregularities. They looked into the VaxVault results further. They did some more digging. The AFL interviewed everyone. They went really hard on this and they found that there was no evidence of collusion, no proof at all that clubs were doing anything to game the system. If they did, Jared, we might well have been talking loss of premiership points and all sorts of serious consequences. Instead, it was deemed to be laziness. The AFL Integrity Department found test images weeks apart were the same pick, same background, same marble benchtop, if you like. So they looked further into the VaxVault to audit it, and they wanted to check the photos were attached to the test, the tests had been uploaded, etc. It's funny, did we speak a couple of weeks ago, or a week and a half ago? The clubs had been saying, hang on, you've slashed the soft cap, you've taken people out of our football department. You shouldn't be surprised that one staffer can't necessarily control 45 players to hand everything in on time, the app's crashing or whatever. You know, they're also pointing out the rooms are open again to the public after games. People are allowed in whose vaccination history is unknown. The AFL is saying, hang on, it was a privilege to play over the last couple of years with people locked in their homes, and they've put it on the clubs this year to take some accountability themselves with what they're going to give them the system. They all signed up for the start of the year. And they've also, the AFL, Jared, taken into account, this is interesting, the seniority of staff at Clubland as well. So the Swans, who were fined the most, 100,000, half of that in the soft cap, which really is where it hurts, copped as much as anything because of the people who have been in charge there for a long time and perhaps should have known better the seniority that the Sydney Swans have at their disposal in this space and that perhaps more was expected of them. They did it, the AFL, because finals are coming. The AFLW season is about to start. They wanted to see what was happening around COVID compliance. So they make no apologies at all, the AFL. And it is a reminder, they're saying, to clubs to get their processes in place. VaxVault's been going all season. If the clubs aren't doing it and they're providing falsified photos of old tests and someone comes in with COVID and it spreads throughout the club and 10 players are missing in a final, then the consequences are enormous. So it was a forceful reminder.
So the AFL stated in its release that nobody had sought competitive advantage. Now, there wasn't enough information to tell us why that was their finding. So in the people you've spoken to, is it accepted that people weren't trying to con the system to remain available when they shouldn't have been.
No, it wasn't like a player had tested positive and they'd submitted a negative result. That is the firm belief of all the interviews and all the evidence gathered by the AFL Integrity Department. And also, I should add, it's not like one player has used the same photo for 8 negative test results either. It's not that widespread. But the AFL were concerned enough to crack down really hard. I mean, $50,000 in the soft cap for one club is a significant amount. So the clubs didn't like it. They didn't like it at all. In some cases, they had staff members who are relatively junior, really upset. They felt they'd been intimidated in the interviews that were conducted by the AFL. Some were close to tears or in tears. You know, how can this person be expected to collate 45 player results? So they're saying the AFL, well, that's fine. But this is a reminder then. Get your processes in place properly for the pointy end of the season and for AFLW beyond.
Yeah, it's a good shake-up to the players as well because the soft cap hit materially affects them next year. So it's not a huge imposition to be able to do your test on time and upload your photo.
No.
And now it's serious.
Oh, really serious. Yeah. So anyway, those two statements did jar, didn't they? But the AFL saying there was no proof whatsoever that competitive advantage was sought.
Excellent. Sam, thank you.
Thanks, Jared.
So Sam with the, it's an indication, an update, if you will. And that's, so Robbo's piece today uses the word indication. It's just that morphed into tell us now and other reporting around a deadline. I used the word deadline last night, in fact. So that's, we'll just temper that. Today is not D-Day. Just are you still in play? Yeah, I'm still in play. No worries. Just let us know. Just let us know. Oh, it's going to make for some tense times, that's for sure. Sam Edmonds with the latest in footy. Effective Freight Solutions, delivering simple freight solutions to help grow your business. Visit efs.net.au. There's a lovely photo that's been circulated from the weekend on Ricky Ponting's social media, and it's a cohort of former teammates, Australian cricketing teammates, but friends more than anything else, Justin Langer, Brett Lee, Matthew Hayden, Darren Lehman, Andy Bickle, Greg Blewett, Shane Watson, Ricky Ponting, and Adam Gilchrist. I've already been part of two conversations today with other blokes saying, this is what we are no good at. This is what we should do. And sometimes it's tragedy that prompts that. And that's certainly the case for an Australian cricket cohort. So a day of golf, a lunch, a bit of a punt, old stories told. Adam Gilchrist joins me every Wednesday. Gilly, welcome back.
G'day, Jared. Yeah, good to chat, mate. And yeah, you're right. We all keep saying it shouldn't take tragedy or misfortune or unforeseen circumstance to create these situations. But gee, it was well worthwhile, and it's nice that we followed through on something that came up as a bit of a suggestion at one of the funerals, that perhaps we should just try to spend some time getting together, and not when someone's passed away, but just more regularly, just to find out how we're going, keep in touch, and enjoy each other's friendship and fellowship. Because as Ricky himself said, we spent the best part of 10 to 15 years of our lives all living in each other's pocket, and then all of a sudden we disappear into our own little lives. And geographically, there's challenges, and occupationally, and what people do post their career. But, and we're sort of ships in the night through the summer where you bump into each other a bit, but it's around work. So it was no work at all, very little work spoken, and it was tremendously emotional and a wonderful experience. And the only thing, I guess, once it, and there's Ricky, who was, the chief. Well, he's our captain. As simple as that. We thought we should continue to call him skipper. And it's just funny how those things move into life away from the game. But it was he himself that put the picture up on his Instagram, and a couple of others are sprinkled out there. But once it's in that public space, my mind instantly, and we discussed it on the day or over the weekend, about other guys that very much could easily be there, and some should have, or some were meant to be, but things came up, and others will be going, well, hang on, I wasn't invited, but we're, the first of many, and we'll slowly spread the net further and further wide to, bring in whoever wants to be a part of it in our group that we had a very special bond with.
That's lovely. So what was it? Golf on Friday and Palmer and a pot and a punt on the Saturday?
Yeah, pretty much all of that plus more. I missed the golf. I did my show on Friday morning in Perth, so I I lobbed in Friday afternoon and saw that and caught up with Boof and Andy Bickle and a couple of others that couldn't get to the golf course. The boys came in and had all sorts of war stories from a, well, not, you know, you think you're going to be catching up about long, things long gone in the past, but all they're doing is bickering about the 15th on, you know, and whose shot landed close to the pin and binger out of the rough and all that. So, yeah, we had a Friday night in Melbourne. And then Saturday morning, Ricky did a fine job as captain, took us down to the peninsula and we had a nice day at the brewery down there in the evening, and then very generous of the Sorrento Hotel to allow us a bit of an opportunity to give it a test run before it reopens. So a big shout out to them. They're a great organisation, great family business, and yeah, it was tremendous. Really, really emotional. There's no doubt about that. There's moments there where we stopped and paused for reflection and thought, and it was highly emotive, and it's nice to share it with each other.
Yeah, that's a lovely story to hear, Gilly, and you'll be surprised how quickly that has resonated just between blokes who we just don't catch up as often as we should, and it's a lovely example in extreme circumstances. So yeah, it's nice that Ricky shared it.
It was, yeah, and I totally understand the public's interest in things like this because they are, it's all positive. It's all very much feel good. And of course, it was just the day before where, well, the passing of Paul Greene, and it was Greeny who I said on my show on Monday to Goss, ironically, after Simo's funeral, I ended up back in Simo's shed in Townsville with Jimmy Maher, who delivered an amazingly beautiful, powerful eulogy at Roy's funeral. And one or two other guys, and one of those guys was Paul Green, who was particularly close to Roy. And you know, the tragedy of what unfolded the day before we got together last week only reinforced it all. So there'll be a lot of that going on in the rugby league world, no doubt, and it resonates across all society.
Thanks for sharing that, Gilly. Hey, so 2 p.m. today, Sydney Thunder, major player announcement. This is Dave Warner, yes?
I was going to say no prizes, I reckon. No prizes for guessing who, but I'd expect that's going to be David Warner. It's terrific news for the Big Bash, if indeed it is the case. I think it's going to obviously create the draw attention to it. It's going to create great excitement. It'll create a lot of discussion with what's right or wrong, or, you know, by philosophically from the Big Bash to go and harpoon this big whale in the landscape of world cricket and reel him back into where it all sort of started for him. One of the most enthralling passages of play was about 10 years ago when David Warner was mic'd up, when it was pretty new to batters being mic'd up and talking us through a brilliant 32 ball 50 he was playing at the SCG, and that was part of the Big Bash coverage. So, look, wonderful. As I say, it'll invoke conversation about the guys like, you know, Maxwell or Stoinis or these Finch, the guys that have been on the full journey of the Big Bash. Should they be getting topped up? I just suspect, I think, well done, Big Bash League. Well done, Cricket Australia. There may be more other little deals going on here and there. I think they're just doing their best to get through this season to try and spark the interest again. We've got the draft coming up. You know, whether that's a hit or not, who knows? But it's got its complications. But they've got Warner now. So they're doing all they can to attract the pizzazz and the attention back to the competition. We'll have to wait and see how it rolls out. But I think they're saying to the players, please stick with us. Let's get through this year because of the pace with which all this has been moving around T20 cricket and the other leagues. Let's assess it after this. We'll have an MOU to go through. We'll pay you more, but let's just try to really juice this one up and get it back, get it some value back.
Do you know, and I won't ask you to break confidences here, but you had Maxwell and Finch as part of the Fox commentary on the BBL games at various stages last year. Do you know if Warner's package is going to include a broadcast element?
I don't know. Yep. Hand on heart, have no idea. I haven't been privy to conversations around that from a Fox point of view. And I think the three of them, certainly we have used Davey a few times in different manners. So I'm not sure if his deal is exclusive Fox, but I know certainly Glenn Maxwell and even Aaron Finch, I think, has done a bit of both Fox and Seven, which I think is fine. We're all there. We're all there. We're all in the cricket business. So we don't need one to be dominating the other. I think we need, first and foremost, cricket to be in a healthy situation as broadcasters. And then both our products, for want of a better term, that's the modern way, isn't it?
Yeah.
That we can deliver as a broadcast will be better for it. So I don't think we need to get too protective. Let's just try and work alongside, hand in hand, and make sure that we're delivering for the viewers out there and the consumers.
Have you watched much of the 100?
Bits and pieces. You know, just, I mean, it's time. You know what I've probably seen is a little bit more of the women's 100, just because it starts at about 10 p.m. Here in Perth. So I've, you know, watched sort of a first half hour of a game or something like that before I saunter off to bed. But you get a half hour build up. Gee, they've a bit like the WBBL. It really, they've put a lot of energy and resource into it, and they've got all the experts there, men's and women's, tied into terrific broadcasts. And it's really enlightening and interesting to see, learn more about these personalities in the women's game, and that continues to grow. So, but the 100, it's, I think you need to watch enough of it to really just know what's going on a scoring point of view and what graphics are on the screen. It takes a little bit of getting used to, but I'm still caught in, it's still 2020 cricket in my mind.
Yep, yep.
But I haven't seen enough to really see the intricacies of the rules. You know, the new batter always faces, doesn't matter who's on strike, technically in the old rules, but that person has to face the first ball once they're out there. Things like that. So, yeah. What about yourself? Taking any in?
Yeah, so I've been, it's on it. It's on replay at Fox when I get there each afternoon. That's when they turn the game around on 5:01. So, yeah, and the graphics on the screen. But what I can't quite get is whether it's, so the environment looks like the best of the BBL at the start, so that's great. But I just can't quite figure out the differentiation, whether it's significant between what the 100 concept is and the T20, and whether that will lead to an evolution or a usurping. That's the bit I just don't have a view on yet.
Yeah, and I guess it then starts to branch down into the financial side of it. And of course, that the 18 counties were never going to truly give up their identity. So they still have that, what is it, the Vitality Blast, I think they call it. The 220 blast effectively between the counties, which I think Lancashire won this year. But so down to eight teams, eight franchises, if you like, that's the modern term too. So where the finances go, is it all controlled by the ECB and they distribute out to the counties? So everyone still gets a lick of the ice cream, or whether it's that's going to grow in its own entity, and who knows, that big beast that's overarching the private equity model coming in, and namely IPL teams going and picking up teams in other leagues. So it all remains to be seen. And you're right, I can't see a significant difference in the actual application of the game and what happens out in the tactics. There's power plays, there's limits on bowlers. It's limited overs cricket condensed.
The one moment of controversy from an Australian perspective is the Marcus Stoinis reaction after he was dismissed by Mohammad Hasnain, and he mimicked a chucking motion as he was leaving the ground, and that has drawn some condemnation, hasn't it? Did you catch that? Do you have a view on that?
I saw it. I'm trying to throw myself back 15 years back into being a player, and when you're up against an opponent, and the one that jumps out in mind that was the highest profile, the leading wicket taker in Test cricket, Murali from Sri Lanka, and the controversy around his action. We've been there and done that as players, where you know there's questions, you know there's scrutiny, and possibly there's been testing, and he's come out of the lab and being cleared, and then, you know, you're playing against him, and he's getting you out because he's so good, first and foremost. The frustrations, the emotion can come to the fore, and you think, well, no, I still reckon he's got an illegal action, rightly or wrongly, but in your mind, and you're in the eye of the storm, so you think it's the most important thing in the world. It's certainly the most important thing in your cricketing world being dismissed and therefore possibly leading to you missing out on selection and all the things that can come with failure. So it can just get, it bubbles too much inside and it's hard to contain your emotion and your actions. And I pardon the pun, but I think Marcus Stoinis would reflect on that and think there's no need to display it there and then. You've just, whether it's in protest of a bowling action, in protest of a decision or a pitch condition or whatever, or your teammate running you out,
yeah,
like any of those issues in sport and in cricket particularly, you've just got to deal with it once you're out of sight. Get into the change rooms, get somewhere, safe environment, and then work out how to deal with it. But you certainly just can't afford to play it out in that such a public forum there. You're going to under scrutiny.
Adam Gilchrist for Australian Made for Success Exporting Overseas. Carry the kangaroo logo. The next test series is England and South Africa. Bazball is all the rage in the public conversation. We know how the English press is with a slogan, and Bazball is it. South Africa, we're not interested in Bazball, but as Ben Stokes points out here, have a listen to this, Gilly, is it does seem to be very much all that South Africa is talking about.
The opposition seems to be doing a lot of the talking at the moment about it. We don't really speak about that much. We just concentrate on what we do. You know, we've got a style of play. They've got a style of play. At the end of the day, it's bat against ball. Whoever plays best over a test match is, you know, more than likely to win. But, you know, we don't dive into it too much. But happy for Dean and the South African team to keep saying they're not interested, but then also keep talking about it.
Oh, I love that interaction between teams in the build-up to battle.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. There's so many things to talk about and look forward to about this series. I mean, of course, South Africa out in Australia later on in our summer, so we'll get an indication of where they're at and changing different conditions, of course. But I think South Africa could fire a few more shots across both series, the England and the Australian ones, than what we might give them credit for. But I spoke with Brendan McCullum on my program just after England had completed that sort of four tests in a row where they chased in and around 300 in the fourth innings at pace. And he played it down a bit like the captain there has. Look, it's just trying to unlock our skills as best we can. And they'll have days where they come a gutter, where it falls over and everyone goes, oh, so you can't sustain it. But good on them for having a go. I don't think South Africa would be focusing on that much more. Probably they're just answering questions that they've been asked about it. So I'm sure Dean Elgar's not going, come on, boys, we can't attack. We got to defend stoutly like he does as his own personality type and player type, which is so valuable to test cricket. It'll be good fun to watch it all play out.
A Lord's Test match, 8 o'clock tonight. It's always a beautiful thing. Last one I wanted to ask you about, Gilly, is Ian Chappell has retired from his commentary duties. He was one of the broadcasters for your entire playing career, and he's clearly one of the standard setters and the forebearers for the profession that you're in now. How do you think of Ian Chappell?
When I think of him, the first thing I think is a lovely quote that I heard him say once about me, and I've spoken with him, and he's not sure whether he actually said it as directly as this, or he certainly said he didn't say it with the intent to have what could possibly be perceived as a negative connotation. But I heard him say that Adam Gilchrist is never out of form. He's always out before he can lose form. So and I really like that. It resonated with me because, maybe it ties into Bazball. Go in and get them before they get you. And if it comes off, good. And if not, nothing to worry about. You just keep going and attacking. So he was clearly an iconic Australian captain and player in an iconic era. And a guy that then morphed in and took the broadcast with that Nine team and Packer and so on to a level that every nation and every broadcaster aspired to. And then it's arguable up to who thinks it's been met or surpassed or whatever, but they were the pioneers through that period. And he's also a guy that, unsurprisingly, was so close and probably embedded in Shane Warne that I don't care what anyone else thinks of me. I'm just going to say what I think and how I believe and what I believe in, and the rest can, you know, you can make of it what you want. I'm not here to make friends with my commentary or comment, but I'm just going to be pure and open and honest. And there's certainly, Cipelli's stayed with that all the way through his commentary, and Warnie certainly lived life like that. So, no, there's a lot of our generation and era in a cricketing sense that owe a strong vote of thanks to Ian Chappell and that pioneering era, both on and off the field and then into the broadcast.
Always great to chat, Adam. Thanks a lot for your time today.
Good on you, Jeb. See you later. And hey, go Blues. Don't talk those pies up too much. Come on. Boys are safe at the top.
It's a big day on Sunday. Awesome. Adam Gilchrist, for Australian Made, it's important to buy Australian right now. Look for the logo and be sure it's Aussie. On a Wednesday, Wayne Hawkes comes into the studio, usually to talk racing, but just a little bit of footy to digress to start with. Wayne, good to see you.
Morning, Mr. Football. I'm going to call you Mr. Racing in a minute. Tell you why.
Okay. You're in the stands on Saturday night as a Blues man?
Couldn't believe it. Absolutely couldn't believe it. I was so peeved off. I was dirty as.
Yep.
Not for the fact of anything other than with 2 minutes to go, we decided to go backwards and waste time. I mean, you can't do that. Not in this game. You can kick 3 goals in 2 minutes, how fast the game is. And being there, it actually shows you how fast it is. I don't think it looks quite as fast on TV, but when you're there in real life, I mean, Michael Voss and the coaches, everyone bags the coaches. I mean, can we not talk any more about coaches this week? They all bag coaches, but what about those imbeciles? That's what they are. And these blokes are on $3 to $1 million. Seriously. Shame, 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 as Darren Inch would say. And I was pissed. I'm going to say it. I was pissed. And I left, yes, and I drove up in the car past the Hilton Hotel, past the Peter McCallum Ward, and I went, you know what? That puts things in perspective, and it is only a game. So I cooled my heels, but gee, by God, I was angry. Terrible.
What an insight into you as a footy fan. Do you think you took the football loss worse than you take a Group 1 loss?
I did on Saturday night. And I, you know what, I'm a dollar each way footballer. I'm not following Carlton because I've had a good year. I've always been a Carlton supporter, but I'm a fair weather supporter. If they win, well and good. If they don't, it doesn't faze me.
Yep.
I don't live and die by the sword. But talk about angry. I mean, you see why. I mean, I was in Adelaide that night when Mick Mulhouse, I think it was, smashed the phone down at Footy Park. I mean, I'll never forget that. 400 people turned around. That's how loud it was. But my God, those coach boxes. No wonder that the windows are about 4 inches thick. Sorry for anyone that understands reading.
Are you going to go on Sunday? Carlton Collingwood, can you dust yourself off?
Am going on Sunday. No, I'm gonna lap it up. I'm in a super box on Sunday, so I'm gonna lap it up. I was invited 3 weeks ago, and I said yes, I'll go. That was before last Saturday night. But anyway, it is only a game. It's as simple as that. Well done last night. You are a funny man. For a bloke that's not funny, you are funny. Do not give Robbo that wine. There's people out the front wanting to deliver wine here to SEN saying, please give it to Jared and tell him not to give it to Robbo. Good morning, Robbo.
It's such a dilemma as to whether to take the 2 bottles in or not.
What are you going to do? Do we have to wait till 7:29 and watch it tonight?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I might. I'll rummage around in the cupboard at home and see what's there. I'm not going to the bottle shop and buying 2 St. Henri's. I'm happy to give that as a spoiler.
Mate, I'm not even going to name a name because we might get into trouble. Just go and find some old crappy one that's old. Just quickly.
Yes.
Went to the races on Sunday at Bendigo, had a nice horse, I was saddling it up. And I heard, I don't know, not sure, see what the boys think, undecided, I turned around, someone's been smart to me, taken off me as a post-race interview, giving the punters nothing. And this bloke's hanging over the fence, one of the most famous football identities ever, and I mean ever. So what are you doing here, mate? He said, I've been home, I've gone to Mortialloc, I've driven from Mortialloc to Bendigo, which is, 2 hours at least? I said, wow. He said, I'm looking for Paul Prushka's horse. He said, Paul Prushka's an old mate of mine. Do you know where the horse stall is? I said, look, the guy walking towards us now with the glass on, I said, go and see him because he's a steward and he will know where Paul Prushka's horses are. He walks back dragging his backside on the ground. I said, how'd you go? He said, the bloody thing scratched. Good afternoon to you, or good morning to you, Rex Hunt.
Oh, right.
Poor old Rexy. There he was. He hadn't checked the scratchings. And, you know, I thought, oh, how silly. But then I thought, you know what, maybe everyone doesn't check the scratchings like I would, but he's driven from Mortialloc to Bendigo. You know what, it was good to actually catch up and say hello to the great man.
What's going on in racing?
Well, you know what? You are Mr. Racing. Mm. You're Mr. Football, but let me tell you, you're Mr. Racing. Last week, we didn't know what to say. You, all of a sudden, you come out and said, no, push the carnival back 3 weeks, do this, do that. Racing officials were probably up in arms. I've laid low. I haven't spoken to any CEOs, especially Steve Rossish from Flemington, to know what they think about pushing the first Tuesday in November back to about the last Tuesday in November. But I see Ben Dorries on RaceNet has came out and with this great new initiative to push the carnival back 3 or 4 weeks because there's a breath of fresh air in November and December and we're not using it.
A good idea is a good idea.
Well, I suppose it's a good idea if it's yours.
Everyone's welcome to come on board with that.
Well, he's not going to say he followed. He probably does. I mean, I think he lives in Queensland maybe, but he probably doesn't listen to SEN in Queensland, not SEN 1116 in Melbourne, but... It's. I haven't spoken to Steve Rossish from Flemington. They're either going to be going, or, oh my God, what is Whateley doing?
Well, Steve will know the power of football.
100%.
And how futile it is to go against.
Steve was the former CEO of Fremantle for about 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah. So you should just run you can actually track these things. Run a case study on how much traction the Winx Stakes gets on Saturday. An August Group 1.
The Memsey Stakes Saturday week.
Yeah, yeah. And how that marries up against an October Group 1 once footy is finished.
I thought about that, but I also, remember what I just said before, I'm a fair weather footballer supporter. So Sydney flogging Collingwood, didn't care. Had no interest, didn't worry me. So, I mean, there are people that don't know that the Winx Stakes are on, but you know what, there'll be people that actually don't know that Collingwood are playing Carlton this summer at the MCG.
But that sporting catchment, that follows both, and it's huge. The people, the football, the hardcore football people who are interested in racing, we all roll out to the track as soon as footy finishes. That's immeasurable.
Yeah, no doubt. No, the more I thought about it, the more it is growing a bit of legs in my mind.
So the first Group 1 of the season has Mwanga, Animo, Profondo, who I'm really curious about, Fangirl, Hinged, and Duace, who's the Caulfield Cup favourite.
Yep.
And you've got Hilal.
Yes.
Who's got a couple of nice scalps on the shelf. How are we looking towards the first Group 1?
Well, from my point of view, Hilal, he just doesn't like the wet tracks, and he's raced on wet tracks. And he's another one of these. I think I mentioned it last week or the week before. They've got wet track form, but they're not wet trackers. Masked Crusader, Yearning. So at the end of the day, we're going to have a dry track, hopefully in Sydney on Saturday. So it's a tough race for Hilal, but I think he'll run well. But you're right, with Animo back, I mean, Animo's probably nearly the pin-up horse of Australian racing other than Nature Strip, I reckon. He's as good as what there is. So it'll be a good measure for them and how they go.
Yeah, I feel like racing's best horses need to win early in the spring, and it's not usually set up that way, is it? Because they're long campaigns.
Quite often they're not running this early.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite early for Animo, to be fair, to be running in a Cox Plate in a couple of months' time, and it's only a couple of months' time, but the point is this is round one in a footy season. You're not jammed up for round one. He's got to be there in round 10 in 10 weeks' time for a Cox Plate. That's where he needs to be at his peak, so... Quite interesting that they're running him in that race, but it's Group 1, that's why.
From our intriguing horses, we need to be on alert tomorrow.
Yes, we have got Magic Rain tomorrow, but he's drawn the car park. I think he's drawn Barrier 15 without looking at scratchings. So we're going to have to run him, so we're just going to have to go back and ride him for a bit of luck and let him hit the line. And on Saturday, Fujita Sands running at Moonee Valley. He's the Caulfield Guineas first or second favourite, so... Hopefully they'll run along hard and he'll just be sitting in behind him somewhere and see whether he can get over the top of him, and that will sort him out whether we sort of, you know, where we're heading, Caulfield Guineas, Derby, both, one or the other, not sure.
And I noticed that Zarek was flagged as a star trialer out of Sydney last Friday, wasn't he?
Zarek. Zarek was nominated for the Winx Stakes, but he is heading to Melbourne. So hopefully John and Michael have done their job and he's going to run next Saturday in the Memsey Stakes Group 1 first up 1,400 metres Caulfield.
Tony's text through. Racing won't work end of November, December. Rolling too close to Christmas Black Friday sales in retail centres up against it. Tony, come
Tony,
on.
Tony, I've never been to a Black Friday sale in my life.
Come on, Tony. Seriously. Shopping. Shopping against racing. We're not running to the couple of weeks before Christmas. We're tidying up right at the end of November.
I could take Alistair Clarkson there from Essendon, and that'll be fantastic for him. He can come to the races, have a look.
What a head. There's all sorts of reasons to say no, but that's a weird one, Tony. Thanks for your correspondence.
These are your listeners, Jared. Don't laugh.
There's all sorts of reasons to say no. That's not one of them. Alex, this is to you. This guy is so grumpy.
Me?
I think that was
you would have been two of you in the Great Southern Stand. No, seriously.
I agree.
Unbelievable it was.
All right.
So felt sorry for them.
Magic
the coaches.
Tomorrow.
Yes.
We're waiting on Zarek and Fajita Sands.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Saturday at Caulfield.
7:29 Foxtel. Will or won't Jared give Robbo the wine? If Jared doesn't lob with the wine, Robbo's not coming on. We should get a poll on that.
Would he leave if I don't bring the wine? I believe
can
he probably would.
Can you do it?
Can I do the first segment on my own?
Of course you can. You sit near by yourself on a Monday morning for the first 30 minutes, don't you?
All right. See you next week.
See you, mate.
Wayne Hawks. Bit of racing and a bit of all else in life as well.